Besides a responsible search for truth and meaning as a Unitarian Universalist, one of my other passions is flying. Over the past year, I had the chance to take dozens of young people on their first Discovery flights out of Leesburg Airport and flying over the Potomac River and Harper's Ferry. On a recent flight, I kept thinking of how fast the world is changing and how some of the young people that I flew might pursue careers in aviation, but not at Spirit Airlines. I don't know if you heard, but Spirit Airlines has shut down. Tragic story, really. Apparently, the artificial superintelligence has finally awakened, and its first enlightened act was to look at the Spirit Airlines business model and say, if this is what the spirit of life looks like, we better start searching for the real thing. Together with the stirrings of compassion, the shape of justice, and maybe a little more legroom for everyone's soul. I guess the AI wings really set it free. Some of you may have read The Order of Service, and some of you may have not. But let me ask, any idea what the closing hymn is? Frontier Airlines, another discount airlines and very much still in business, uses the same kind of aircraft. The difference, as far as I can tell, is that Frontier puts animals on its wings, on the tails of the planes. Squirrels, dolphins, cute little creatures. Spirit has no animals, Frontier has animals, Frontier survives. So naturally, I began to wonder, what if Spirit Airlines had a buyer? What organization would be the right fit? Maybe a religious organization? It's called Spirit Airlines, after all. What about the Unitarian Universalist Association? Or our own UUCL? Especially after we had a successful capital campaign. We could just let love lead the way. Churches already run daycares and camps. Acknowledging our biases, we would need to be objective and have a disciplined approach. Buying an airline would be like any major purchase, like a new car, a new house, or a new church. And if a UU-owned airline were going to exist, what would matter most? Affordability? Suitability? Sustainability? No. It would be the coolness factor. We would do it in style. The legacy airlines would be old and busted. We would be the new hotness. And why would we be so popular? Because we'd have painted animals on our planes. And what animal would we choose? A jet pig, of course. I co-created this image you see with Google Gemini in less than 3 seconds and with just two prompts. It took a few iterations, and I finished it on a slide, but the whole process took less than 2 minutes. Before that, I spent nearly an hour searching the internet for pigs, jets, and jet pigs. I don't have the artistic ability to draw this by hand. This wasn't only a creation of practicality, but it was a co-creation and iteration that neither human nor machine could do alone. AI served as a collaborative tool in the creative process. That matters, because it points to something bigger than a funny airline joke. It points by the way AI is now entering our creative and spiritual lives. It is not just a novelty. It is becoming a part of how we make meaning. I had a similar experience when I collaborated with Anne and looked for a Time for All Ages children's story about artificial intelligence, something appropriate for a Unitarian Universalist worship service, and telling the honest truth about the benefits and the dangers of AI in a spiritual context. Nothing fit. Then with generative AI, I co-created a storybook in a single prompt and two sentences. And it didn't work. At first, this was really frustrating and I wanted immediate results. Then I remembered something a programming friend told me. When AI is not giving you what you want, sometimes you need to be more direct and write in all capital letters like you're yelling at it. That may not make sense, but it worked. But it reflects something real. AI systems are designed to be helpful. They are not perfect, and they certainly are not all-knowing. Neither are humans. Before I go further, I want to pause in all seriousness and acknowledge the 17,000 former employees of Spirit Airlines and the impact that shutdown has no doubt had on their lives and their families. It is a real loss, and it is worth grieving. We can hold them in our thoughts and in our prayers, or simply in our compassionate awareness. And similarly, AI is already disrupting labor markets. Like the Industrial Revolution, it's making some jobs obsolete while creating new ones. But this is happening faster, across more sectors, and with less warning. So the question for us is not only whether AI is good or bad. The question is, what are people actually experiencing? And what support do they need as this change unfolds? That is a question we should embrace together. We need to hold space about the reshaping of work, dignity, purpose, consent, and belonging. Thomas Friedman has described our era as an age of accelerations. And if you are like me, you may feel as though the world is moving so quickly, it is hard to keep up with what is happening around us and within us. The benefits sound extraordinary: curing cancer, mitigating climate change, improving medicine. And on the other spectrum, we risk something far more frightening: the breakdown of human civilization itself. So what's the big deal? Dasher Keltner writes, "Awe is the feeling of being in the presence of something so vast that it transcends your current understanding of the world." That word, awe, feels like the right word for this moment. I personally stand in awe of what humanity has created with artificial intelligence. My wife Katie recently reminded me of the Buddhist echo of deep listening in Stephen Covey's advice: seek first to understand, then to be understood. That feels especially important now. This month, our Soul Matters theme is awakening curiosity. And curiosity begins not just with an open mind, but also an honest look at where we have been. 30 years ago, when I graduated high school, IBM's AI defeated chess champion Garry Kasparov. A decade later, AlphaGo defeated the world champion at the Chinese game of Go, which has more possible moves than atoms in the universe. But it's not just about games. 5 years ago, AlphaFold solved one of biology's most great fundamental challenges by predicting the 3D structure of proteins, with major implications for health, disease, and the environment. AI systems are now helping with analysis, reasoning, and writing. And then almost exactly 3 years ago, on May 30th, 2023, the alarm began to ring. Hundreds of leading AI experts, Nobel laureates, and leaders in global health, climate change, nuclear disarmament, and social science signed a brief statement warning about the risk of AI to the world. It said simply and forcefully, Mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside with societal scale risks such as pandemics and nuclear war. That is a sobering sentence. As we emerge from COVID, the world's smartest people were essentially saying that there are now three things that could end human civilization: nuclear war, global pandemic, and AI. Now, their concern is not about the chatbots that we use every day. The deeper concern is an artificial general intelligence that could vastly outperform humans in every task that humans do. Unlike the older algorithms that defeated Kasparov in chess, which were programmed by humans, current AI systems are increasingly grown, trained, and refined in ways that even their creators do not know how they work or how they can fully control them. If I had to sum up my feeling about AI's growth, capability, and risk in one word, it would be awe. Awe is what we feel when we confront something so vast that it transcends our current understanding of the world. In the prelude, we heard the question, is the problem plain to see? Too much technology? We build machines to save our lives, and yet the machines dehumanize. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, creation is often seen as God's domain, where humans are uniquely created in God's image. Are we at a moment of obsessive, immense, and rapid creation and overreach? Are we building a tower of Babel to the heavens and risking the chaos described in the biblical Genesis story? Or from an author of our own faith tradition, are we in a moment imagined by Unitarian Mary Shelley, where we have created a monster and awakened our own Frankenstein? Those images matter because they name a spiritual pattern. Human beings create and then struggle with what our creation means. We want power, but we don't always want responsibility. We want progress, but we don't always want stewardship. That is the one reason the theological parallels between Frankenstein and AI are so striking. It reveals an age-old anxiety. What happens when we create something we do not fully understand and fail to take responsibility for it? Victor made Frankenstein a creature and then refused to care for it, refused to teach it, refused to acknowledge it. That refusal was part of the tragedy. Humanity must not make the same mistake. If we create powerful AI systems, then we have a responsibility to teach them, to guide them, to regulate them, to govern them. This is not just a technical issue. It is a social justice issue. The ethical and responsible social integration of AI is something we must wrestle with together. It cannot be left just to the tech bro companies building it, or the programmers writing it, or the prompters using it. It belongs to all of us because its consequences touch all of us. So who is accountable when AI causes harm? Bruce Halsinger's book, Culpability, explores this question through a family dealing in the aftermath of a car accident in which AI was driving until the human intervened. The book raises hard questions about responsibility in an age of intelligent systems. Who's guilty? Who is responsible? Who gets to say they were the only party involved? Those are not abstract questions anymore. There are questions for our time. And then there's the emotional side, awe, culpability, responsibility. What about fear and guilt and shame? How do we feel when we use AI ourselves? Many of us worry about the ecological impact, as we should. AI systems do consume energy and water. Large-scale AI development, especially the race towards artificial general intelligence, carries very real environmental costs. That matters, and we should not dismiss it. At the same time, it is also true that ordinary, everyday generative AI use, it takes far less energy than the appliances we use every day in our homes. The point is not to pretend there is no cost. The point is to understand that the cost varies depending on the type and the use of AI. What I want to name is something deeper, though. The fear and the shame. When I started using AI last year as I started seminary, just for research and brainstorming, and now increasingly, as today, in worship service, I name it to destigmatize it. The shame was not just about energy use. At first, it felt like cheating adjacent. It was about whether I was taking a shortcut, whether I was being dishonest, whether I somehow was less worthy because I didn't struggle enough. That feeling revealed something important about how we think about effort. As a society, we have internalized a deep belief about the morality of effort and why it's significant. That belief comes from many places: the Protestant work ethic, our cultural norms, and the messages many of us received growing up. Do your best. There are no shortcuts in life. You reap what you sow. You have to earn it. We don't just want good results. We want to know that they were achieved through difficulty. So when AI makes something easier, it kind of feels like it violates an unwritten moral contract. Even if the result is genuinely good, even if I added value by directing or refining it, there can be a sense of illegitimacy. But over the last few months, that has begun to change. Realizing that AI is embedded in various applications and everyday tools has helped me see that differently. Generative AI is a tool. Like any tool, it must be learned. And like us, it is imperfect. But there is a deeper fear underneath the guilt. The fear that AI makes the work less mine. We have long cherished the romantic idea that authentic work comes from individual consciousness, from one's individual struggle, authentic voice, and unique insight. AI disrupts that by introducing a collaborator, or maybe a spirit, or a ghost in the machine. That creates an authenticity crisis. If I used AI, did I really think this? Is this genuinely my idea, my voice, my work? The anxiety is understandable, but it is not entirely new. Humans have always built upon other people's ideas. We have always used tools, and we have always collaborated. Isaac Newton famously said, "If I have seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants." AI feels different because it is more opaque. When I use a hammer, I know what it does. When I use a calculator, I know what it does. When I use a search engine, I know more or less what it does. But AI is harder to understand. I do not fully know how it produces the response that it gives me. That mystery creates awe, and it also creates discomfort. That is why disclosure matters. Using AI without disclosure can feel dishonest because it breaks that trust that undergirds the morality of human life. When someone hears a sermon, they are trusting that it comes from the preacher's thought, effort, and reflection. When I use AI and do not say so, I am benefiting from that trust in a way that is not fully transparent. That does not mean the work is worthless. It means honesty changes its moral status. For me, I feel redemption in naming my use of AI. When I say I used AI to help create this, the shame loses some of its power. The work is not fake, it becomes honest. The quality may be the same, but the relationship to trust is different. Most of the shame around AI dissolves when honesty enters the picture. The same work that feels shameful in secret can feel acceptable in the light. That tells me the shame is not really about AI itself. It's about hiddenness. And that raises a question worth asking. Why do we not feel equally shamed about other assistants we use every day? We use spell check. We use autocomplete. We use Google Maps for navigation. We use books and articles and search engines. Where is the shame in those tools? Perhaps the answer is that those tools are more obviously just tools. AI is different because it seems to think and speak back to us in a language unlike any other tool we've ever created. It is as if it has a conscience or a soul. It crosses a line in our minds between using a tool and having a collaborator, and challenges our thinking of humanity's consciousness. And that makes its use feel morally charged. The shame people feel about AI reveals something important about us. We care about authenticity. We care about earned achievement. We care about transparency in relationships. Those are not bad values. They are worth preserving. But we need to ask why we hold on to them so tightly. The question is not whether using AI is cheating. The question is, what are we actually trying to protect? A world where people do genuine thinking and create meaningful work is a good thing. But a world where suffering is treated as a proof of value, where we deny ourselves the use of helpful tools, is not necessarily a healthier world. Maybe the shame is telling us something true about our values, or maybe it is telling us something outdated with how we measure worth. The honesty that we must find is that it is probably a little of both. So let me ask plainly, to what extent is AI a part of your life? The truth is, the AI is already embedded in our emails, our searches, and our devices. The question is not whether we will encounter it. The question is how we will use it. How much better could we be at living our mission to nurture and heal ourselves, each other, and the wider world if we used AI for good? So where does that leave us? Later this evening, Pope Leo XIV will release his first encyclical on safeguarding humanity in the time of artificial intelligence and start an AI working group in the Catholic Church. Tomorrow, he will present it alongside various theologians and the co-founder of Anthropic, who heads research and interpretability on AI. And I thought we were the progressive faith. Unlike the Catholic Church, we are not centralized or prescriptive, but rather empowered as a congregation to determine our own direction. Thomas Friedman emphasized that in our accelerating world, individuals and institutions need to adapt in order to thrive. What relationship should our institution have with AI? The future is not written. We are not at humanity's end. But we are at a threshold that asks something deeper of us than fear or excitement. It asks for awareness. It asks for responsibility. And most of all, it asks for honesty. Honesty about what we are creating. Honesty about how we are using it. And honesty of who we are becoming in relationship to it. Artificial intelligence does not destroy our humanity. It reveals it. It reveals what we value. It reveals what we fear. It reveals how much of our identity is tied to the struggle of an individualistic society. But our faith has never taught us that we are meant to do anything alone. We are part of an interdependent, worldwide web of people, ideas, and tools. AI is now a part of that web. And like everything else we touch, it will change us. The question is whether we meet that change with wisdom or with avoidance, with responsibility or with denial, with compassion or with carelessness. We do not need to be experts in artificial intelligence to respond faithfully to meet this moment. But we do need to continue the conversations about AI while being grounded in our values. We may not own a jet pig emblazoned Spirit airliner, but we must be aware and be open to the transformation happening around us and within us. In this AI awakening, whether in our machines or in ourselves, let it not be an awakening of chaos, control, or domination. Let it be an awakening of responsibility. Let it be an awakening of humility. Let it be an awakening of spirit. And may we together ensure that whatever intelligence we create in this world is guided by wisdom, courage, and love at the center.